Chapter 12. They worked hard at Hyoi's boat till noon, and then spread themselves on the weed close to the warmth of the creek and began their midday meal. The warlike nature of their preparations suggested many questions to Ransom. He knew no word for war, but he managed to make Hyoi understand what he wanted to know. Did Saroni and Hrossa and Fiffeltriggy ever go out like this, with weapons against each other?
"What for?" asked Hyoi.
It was difficult to explain. "If both wanted one thing and neither would give it," said Ransom, "would the other at last come with force? Would they say, 'Give it, or we kill you'?"
"What sort of thing?"
"Well, food, perhaps."
"If the other now wanted food, why should we not give it to them? We often do."
"But how, if we had not enough for ourselves?"
"But Maleldil will not stop the plants growing."
"Hyoi, if you had more and more young, would Maleldil broaden the Handramit and make enough plants for them all?"
"Well, the Saroni know that sort of thing. But why should we have more young?"
Ransom found this difficult. At last he said, "Is the begetting of young not a pleasure among the Hrossa?"
"A very great one, man. This is what we call love."
"Well, if a thing is pleasure, a man wants it again. He might want the pleasure more often than the number of young that could be fed." It took Hyoi a long time to get the point.
"You mean," he said slowly, "that he might do it not only in 1 or 2 years of his life, but again?"
"Yes."
"But why? Why would he want his dinner all day, or want to sleep after he had slept? I do not understand."
"But a dinner comes every day. This love, you say, comes only once while the Hross lives?"
"But it takes his whole life. When he is young, he has to look for his mate, and then he has to court her. Then he begets young. Then he rears them. Then he remembers all this and boils it inside him and makes it into poems and wisdom."
"But the pleasure he must be content only to remember?"
"Well, that is like saying, 'My food I must be content to eat.'"
"I do not understand."
"A pleasure is full-grown only when it is remembered. You are speaking, man, as if the pleasure were one thing and the memory another. It is all one thing. The Saroni could say it better than I say it now, not better than I could say it in a poem. What you call remembering is the last part of the pleasure, as the kra is the last part of a poem. When you and I met, the meeting was over very shortly. It was nothing. Now it is growing something as we remember it. But still we know very little about it. What it will be when I remember it as I lie down to die, what it makes in me all my days till then, that is the real meeting. The other is only the beginning of it. You say you have poets in your world. Do they not teach you this?"
"Well, perhaps some of them do," said Ransom. "But even in a poem, does a Hross never long to hear one splendid line over again?"
Hyoi's reply unfortunately turned on one of those points in their language which Ransom had not mastered. There were two verbs which both, as far as he could see, meant to long or yearn. But the Hrossa drew a sharp distinction, even an opposition between them. Hyoi seemed to him merely to be saying that everyone would long for it, Wunderlone, but no one in his senses could long for it, Hluntheline. "And indeed," he continued, "the poem is a good example. For the most splendid line becomes fully splendid only by means of all the lines after it. If you went back to it, you would find it less splendid than you thought. You would kill it. I mean, in a good poem."
"But in a bent poem, Hyoi?"
"A bent poem is not listened to, Hman."
"And how of love in a bent life?"
"How could the life of a Hnau be bent?"
"Do you say, Hyoi, that there are no bent Hrossa?"
Hyoi reflected. "I have heard," he said at last, "of something like what you mean. It is said that sometimes here and there a cub of a certain age gets strange twists in him. I have heard of one that wanted to eat earth. There might, perhaps, be somewhere a Hross likewise that wanted to have the years of love prolonged. I have not heard of it, but it might be. I have heard of something stranger. There is a poem about a Hross who lived long ago in another Handramit, who saw things all made two. Two suns in the sky, two heads on a neck, and last of all they say that he fell into such a frenzy that he desired two mates. I do not ask you to believe it, but that is the story, that he loved two Hresni."
Ransom pondered this. Here, unless Hyoi was deceiving him, was a species naturally continent, naturally monogamous. And yet, was it so strange?
Some animals, he knew, had regular breeding seasons. And if nature could perform the miracle of turning the sexual impulse outward at all, why could she not go further and fix it, not morally, but instinctively, to a single object? He even remembered dimly having heard that some terrestrial animals, some of the lower animals, were naturally monogamous. Among the Hrossa, anyway, it was obvious that unlimited breeding and promiscuity were as rare as the rarest perversions. At last it dawned upon him that it was not they, but his own species, that were the puzzle. That the Hrossa should have such instincts was mildly surprising. But how came it that the instincts of the Hrossa so closely resembled the unattained ideals of that far-divided species man, whose instincts were so deplorably different? What was the history of man? But Hyoi was speaking again. Undoubtedly, he said, Maleldil made us so. How could there ever be enough to eat if everyone had 20 young? And how could we endure to live and let time pass if we were always crying for one day or one year to come back? If we did not know that every day in a life fills the whole life with expectation and memory, and that these are that day. All the same, said Ransom, unconsciously nettled on behalf of his own world, Maleldil has let in the Hnakra. Oh, but that is so different. I long to kill this Hnakra as he also longs to kill me. I hope that my ship will be the first, and I first in my ship with my straight spear when the black jaws snap. And if he kills me, my people will mourn, and my brothers will desire still more to kill him. But they will not wish that there were no Hnaraki, nor do I. How can I make you understand, when you do not understand the poets? The Hnakra is our enemy, but he is also our beloved. We feel in our hearts his joy as he looks down from the mountain of water in the north, where he was born. We leap with him when he jumps the falls. And when winter comes, and the lake smokes higher than our heads, it is with his eyes that we see it, and know that his roaming time is come. We hang images of him in our houses, and the sign of all the Hrossa is a Hnakra. In him the spirit of the valley lives, and our young play at being Hnaraki as soon as they can splash in the shallows. And then he kills them? Well, not often them. The Hrossa would be bent Hrossa if they let him get so near. Long before he had come down so far, we should have sought him out. No, man, it is not a few deaths roving the world around him that make a Hnau miserable. It is a bent Hnau that would blacken the world. And I say also this, I do not think the forest would be so bright, nor the water so warm, nor love so sweet, if there were no danger in the lakes. I will tell you a day in my life that has shaped me, such a day as comes only once, like love, or serving Oyarsa in Meldilorn. Then I was young, not much more than a cub, when I went far, far up the Handramit to a land where stars shine at midday and even water is cold. A great waterfall I climbed. I stood on the shore of Balki, the pool, which is the place of most awe in all worlds. The walls of it go up for ever and ever, and huge and holy images are cut in them, the work of old times. There is the fall called the Mountain of Water. Because I have stood there alone, Maleldil and I, for even Oyarsa sent me no word, my heart has been higher, my song deeper all my days. Do you think it would have been so unless I had known that in Balki Hnaraki dwelled? There I drank life because death was in the pool. That was the best of drinks, save one. What one? Asked Ransom. Death itself, in the day I drink it and go to Maleldil. Shortly after that they rose and resumed their work. The sun was declining as they came back through the wood. It occurred to Ransom to ask Hyoi a question. Hyoi, he said, it comes into my head that when I first saw you, and before you saw me, you were already speaking. That was how I knew that you were Hnau, for otherwise I should have thought you a beast and run away. But who were you speaking to? To an Eldil. What is that? I saw no one. Are there no Eldila in your world, man? That must be strange. But what are they? Oh, they come from Oyarsa. They are, I suppose, a kind of Hnau. As we came out today, I passed a child who said she was talking to an Eldil, but I could see nothing. One can see by looking at your eyes, man, that they are different from ours. But Eldila are hard to see. They are not like us. Light goes through them. You must be looking in the right place and the right time, and that is not likely to come about unless the Eldil wishes to be seen. Sometimes you can mistake them for a sunbeam, or even a moving of the leaves, but when you look again, you see that it was an Eldil, and that it is gone. But but whether your eyes can ever see them, I do not know. The Sironi would know that.